In the 1950s, Desi Arnaz hit America's televisions on I Love Lucy.
Here, honey, I'll show you what I mean. Now, you take this book and pretend that our child has come to you and said, Daddy, read me a good night story.
All right.
There you are, Daddy.
Once upon a time, in the woods, lived a peasant. He spent his time in the forest, calling down boojus from the trees.
Wait, just a minute. What is this boojus?
Boojus, right in there.
That's boughs.
And he was probably the earliest example of a Latino on network TV in this country, according to Isabel Molina Guzman. She is the author of the new book, Latinas and Latinos on TV, Colorblind Comedy in the Post-Racial Network Era.
And then you really don't see much after that until you get to the 70s, and then you get Chico and the Man.
Hey.
Oh, buenos dias.
What are you doing in here?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. You see somebody else in the garage?
Garage? Looks to me like un basurero.
What's that supposed to mean?
Basurero, it means junkyard.
Get out of here. Take your flies with you.
And then it wasn't until the George Lopez show premiered on ABC in 2002 that we saw another major show starring a Latino. Since then, though, Molina Guzman says that the representational fortunes of Latina and Latino actors on TV have gotten better, but not by much and not without some considerable limitations. I spoke with her more about it recently and how she thinks the assumption that we live in a post-racial society may be hurting us all.
When I say that it has vastly increased, it has, but just a little bit. It started from nothing, and now we're at like 6%.
Right.
So it's still very low, and most of those characters are secondary characters. They're not leading protagonists. They're not the headliners for the show, like Judy Reyes in Scrubs or Oscar Nunez in The Office. And then, you know, there was the maid in Will and Grace, who's actually like, she's like a classically trained actress that was famous in Mexico. And, you know, that was her big role, playing the maid in Will and Grace.
You washed up on the shore of this country in an inner tube wearing a banana leaf and a couple of coconuts.
Listen, lady, I flew here on business class with my Advantage miles.
So that was really it for most Latino actors, unless they were in like crime shows, in which case they were the maids or the thugs on the street. So that was really the landscape up until Modern Family, really.
Right. And so now we have Modern Family. So you have Sofia Vergara on that show.
Cora.
Howdy, hubby. How about some grub before we turn on the NASCAR?
I'm not going to lie. I like where this is going, but... I'm not sure I'm supposed to.
Ain't this what you want, the perfect American wife to make your life more convenient?
Do you think that's an American accent?
From Texas.
You have Jane the Virgin, right? And Gina Rodriguez getting a lot of attention for that. And there are a couple other examples, I think, on television now of Latinas and Latinos in those lead roles.
Right.
And you say that all of this kind of has happened within what you're calling the post-racial network era. Mm-hmm. So what is that?
So the post-racial network era is basically a period of time right before and during Obama's election where we get this increased rhetoric about the U.S. now being colorblind and post-race. So around that time, you begin to see a lot of network producers turning attention to the fact that minority audiences were really increasing and were actually watching more television than white audiences. And so you get increased attention to trying to target that audience, but still want to maintain sort of the ideal middle class white audience. And as a result, you get the spate of shows that are a set of ensemble characters that are made up of various multicultural identities.
You said that this was sort of driven from within networks, who just sort of started to look at the bottom line. Is that how it went down?
It was two forces, I think. One of it was economic imperative, and the other one was actually the result of media activists, like the Hispanic Media Coalition working with the NAACP and other activist groups to create report cards on all the networks that looked at the diversity within producers, executives, and talent. And they started doing these report cards every year and giving the networks grades on how they performed. And that, alongside with the changing demographics of audiences, I think was the real key in getting to see some change, which still is very minimal.
So you say that the roles that have been opened up for Latinos and Latinas on TV have been constrained by this idea, this demand for colorblindness. So explain that idea to us and how that's affected this.
Yeah, so colorblindness is an idea that comes out of critical legal theory that assumes that in front of the law, everyone is treated the same. And so when we talk about colorblind television, it's a similar thing. We basically see these multicultural ensemble cast. Ethnicity and race is often not the primary focus of the character development or even the storylines. They're there as kind of, you know, multicultural window dressing. And so we have this appearance of diversity without really having any substantive content surrounding those differences. In the case of comedy, like The Office and Parks and Rec and Modern Family and other shows, that translates to also this kind of cringeworthy humor where you have predominantly white protagonists in these shows, often making jokes that are sexist, racist, homophobic. And so those jokes are kind of uncomfortable, but they're never really questioned. You know, there's this sort of implicit assumption that those characters are, at the end of the day, very well-meaning, likable, approachable, and sympathetic. It reinforces against this notion of we don't need to focus on race or ethnicity or ethnic difference because we're beyond that, and therefore we can have humor that pushes the boundaries as well.
And this is this idea of hipster racism that
hipster
you're getting
racism.
At, right? So that's this idea that we're now playing off of, we're now making fun of the colorblind assumption in society. Is that right?
Yeah, or it assumes that because we are living in this colorblind space, we're now living in a society that has moved beyond racism, that the writers and producers of these shows can now use racism as a source of humor. And the way that it's used in these post-racial formats without the laugh track makes that ambiguous. So it's really this form of sort of implicit racism. And that's hipster racism, right? The sense that it's not really racism because it's a joke that's not meant to be racist and doesn't necessarily have to be read that way.
What do you think that means not only for the Latino and Latina characters on these shows, but for the broader society? Like, when we are clearly not in a post-racial society and we are clearly not colorblind.
Right. And that's what got me interested in writing this book is a lot of people, when they hear me talk or they read my work, assume I hate these shows. And it's actually the opposite. I'm a big fan of all these shows. It's, you know, you have to like what you're going to see over and over and over again. But, you know, as the racial hostility towards Obama increased during his presidency, during the supposedly colorblind moment, I saw that happening. And as I saw the Black Lives Matter movement and the immigration rights movement happening, I began to think about what are these shows doing when they engage in this kind of hipster racism, colorblind humor in that context? Like, what does that mean? Just because I'm laughing at these jokes, empathizing with the Latino characters and laughing at the white characters doesn't necessarily mean that everyone watching is reading the show in the same way. Hmm. And I think that's the risk of these shows, is that they do leave, even if there would have been a laugh track like during the Archie Bunker era, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to read the show in one way.
Do you think that shows like these are contributing to the sort of implicit racism in this culture?
I think they don't help. So in the sense that they normalize it by making it an acceptable source of humor, because at the end of the day, the characters that are engaged in the implicit racism or are engaged in the implicitly racist joke, they are never really questioned or contested by the other characters. They're presented as being sort of sympathetically naive. I think it normalizes then that kind of behavior.
Right. Dr. Isabel Molina Guzman is an associate professor of media and cinema studies and Latino studies at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she is the author of the new book, Latinas and Latinos on TV, Colorblind Comedy in the Post-Racial Network Era. Dr. Molina Guzman, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today.
Thank you.